morning. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. Crunchy over there is Ailish Forfar.
Yum, yum, yum.
And J.D. Bunkus.
Now that pig drop is going to be there
the
forever.
The pig drop and the yum, yum, yum.
Yeah, but the pig drop is way worse. Yum, yum, yum is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Pig drop.
Oh, I hate
especially
it.
Especially since I added the...
Yeah.
Also,
poor
there's
John
no
Morosi
way.
Coming in on this.
I was just going to say, you just called... Oh, finally, he's now on the line? Good.
Yeah.
We'll still have whatever little sliver of respect.
And this Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Joining us now, talk a bunch of Jay's stuff, MLB Network Insider, friend of the show, and Jack Campbell superfan, John Morosi. John, good morning.
There you go. Blake, JD, and Ailish, how are you? Yes, I think Jack Campbell belongs in at least one of the three spots on Team USA, correct? He's from the great state of Michigan, which is not the reason why he belongs on the Olympic team, but he's been arguably the best American-born goaltender in the NHL this year.
I'm glad that you say that because I thought maybe it was just us up here in Toronto being like, he's definitely on the Olympic team. So for somebody that isn't living in the bubble that we are, I'm glad to hear it.
Yes. No, I appreciate it. I'm certainly thinking a lot about Olympic hockey these days. I did watch a good win for the U.S. women last night over Canada.
Yeah,
I was impressed.
Yeah.
I didn't want to mention it too much, but I'll say this too. My youngest daughter, who is three, made my day today because she woke up, and this is a direct quote. She said, "Dad, can I please watch the hockey sweater now in French?" So she wanted to watch the French version.
Wow!
So I was very proud. That made me. That was a good start to my day.
That's great. Lovely.
Her French is now better than my French after having not had to do it since grade 10.
We just keep watching La Chandelle du Hockey on repeat every day, we'll eventually some of the vocab will sink in for all of us, we hope.
Something that maybe hasn't sunk in for Blue Jays fans yet because they're just waking up to it is that Steven Matz is headed to St. Louis on a 4-year deal, as reported by Jeff Passan. That's $44 million, could skew as high as $48 million. John, right before you came on with us, you reported that the Blue Jays had offered Matz a 3-year contract. Our own Ben Nicholson-Smith had reported earlier that the sides talked a lot and it was a competitive process. How much were the Jays off in terms of total value over the life of the contract? And, I assume the fourth year is what did it for Matz here.
Right. I don't know the exact per year offer that the Jays made. I do believe it was somewhere in the same range of what Matz ultimately signed for on a per year basis. So I would expect that offer from Toronto was probably somewhere in the range of 3 years, 30, perhaps in the mid-30s, but I think it was that fourth guaranteed year from the Cardinals that really did it. So back to the drawing board now for the Jays. I mean, they know they need more pitching. The Berríos deal was great. It locked them in long-term. It's a perfect fit for them in the future, but, of course, they have to still address now the departure of Matz and Robbie Ray still being out there. So they have some serious work to do here. I know they're still involved in Kevin Gausman, who I would expect to be more expensive than what Steven Matz was, and it's a tough loss for the Jays because Matz was a good fit. He had a very durable year for the Jays, worked very well with Pete Walker. He understands what a great baseball city Toronto is, so there was that hometown pull, if you will, where he really understands why this is such a great place to play. And I think for the Jays, it's a disappointing day. There's no way around it. I think they did make, as you point out, as Ben reported, a very competitive offer. But at the end of the day, I think it was that fourth year from the Cardinals that made that deal work from Steven's perspective.
So this is where I'm at with it. Clearly, they've been in on a bunch of different pitchers. They haven't landed any of them other than their own guy, Berríos. And that shouldn't be lost in this. But, hey, if you were that aggressive for Matz where you were willing to offer him a 3-year deal, what does that indicate about the other stuff? Because, yeah, we've always known that they've loved Gausman, and we've joked about that with you, how they're always the bridesmaid with him, right? Where they always strike out on Gausman. Robbie Ray is the, you know, he's the apple of the free agency eye to many people, but he's going to be expensive. I guess the question is, we've always looked at it as, hey, the Blue Jays are probably going to trade for a pitcher and sign a pitcher. But what happens now in that market if it's not a Gausman or a Robbie Ray? Like, where is the pivot point for this team now?
That's a great question. question. And I do think that they're obviously in there on those big names, as you mentioned. I think one name to keep in mind that I think has been a little underrated in the market right now is John Gray, of course, most recently with the Rockies. And he is someone who put together a pretty good run of success in a ballpark that is notoriously difficult to pitch in, of course, at Coors Field. And for him, I would imagine if you're leaving Colorado, almost any place looks appealing, and from a standpoint of the hitter-friendly nature of a ballpark, where I don't think he'd be afraid to pitch at Rogers Center if the Jays were the high bidder in terms of the free agency. So I do think Gray is one name to watch carefully. I mean, really, to me, Ray is probably number one. Gossman's probably number two. Stroman is somewhere in that top five. I think Gray is a top five pitcher in free agency right now, and I would expect that we'll see the Jays make a pretty serious push for him. Now that they're not going to get Mats, I think Gray is a natural pivot point if you are not necessarily sanguine about your chances to sign one of the top two pitchers out there in Ray or Gossman.
If you could see the smile on Blake's face right now, it might be lighting up the skies all the way to Michigan. He is grinning ear to ear because he's a huge Gray fan.
Good. No, Blake, I'm glad to hear it, because I think Gray is someone, and by the way, one of the other key parts about Gray as a free agent is there was no qualifying offer, which surprised a lot of people. The Rockies had some trade conversations about Gray during the summer. They talked about wanting to keep him, but now you don't trade him in July. You don't give him the QO. He's probably going to leave. It really, I think, stumped a lot of people around the industry as to why they didn't at least give him the qualifying offer. Because as we're even seeing with Mats now, pitchers who don't have the qualifying offer attached to them are very valuable, because other teams around the game know they can get that pitcher without having to give up a pick. And that's also true for Gray. So I would expect it's going to be a very competitive process, and perhaps the numbers even wind up north of what Matt's got on a per-year basis. I don't think Gray necessarily gets more than 4 years, but I think you're probably talking about that same price range 4 years into the $40 million guarantee range to get John Gray.
That's I'm glad you mentioned the qualifying offer thing, and I know you kind of touched on it there, but do you have a sense of, you know, what the dollar value on that is worth? Like if you're sitting there at the finish line with two guys and one has the qualifying offer attached and one doesn't, what type of discount does a team need, or what type of premium are they willing to pay for a non-qualifying offer guy because there's not that compensation attached?
No, it's a great question. It's hard to probably place that exact number on it, but I do think it could be over the lifetime of a deal. Let's put it this way. It could be the difference of a million or $2 million per year. I think that if Matt's had a QO attached to him, maybe he does only get 3 years. Maybe it's 4 years, 40 instead of 44. I think that's entirely possible. So I would say $1 million a year is a very, I think, conservative estimate from where I sit as to what that value is. And the other part of it is, and why it's so unique, you know, Syndergaard was a very fascinating case because the Angels just got him for 1 year, and we're still willing to give up the pick. I think the conventional wisdom for a long time was, if you're going to sign somebody who has a qualifying offer, you darn better make sure that you're going to get multiple years out of it, because you're giving up a pick to get him, unless you really believe in the player. And I think in the case of Perry Manassian, knowing Noah Syndergaard since he was a young Blue Jays prospect, perhaps that was the familiarity and that emotional pull for Perry and the Angels to sign him to only a one-year deal. But I think, to your point, Blake, it has a pretty profound effect on market value, and if anything, might incentivize the team to sign that player to a longer-term contract because of the fact that you know you're giving up a pick, so you want to build in that longer-term value to your club as a compensation, if you will, for not having that draft pick.
Okay, so John Gray is the sexy blogger pick. That's a one for Blake.
Oh, there you go, Blake. I'm glad that, and the thing is, JD, I did not even correspond before the show with Blake to coordinate that. We just are on the same mental wavelength, which I love.
The one, The one name that you mentioned there, though, that everybody heard, and then, like, for me, you guys been talking ever since you said Marcus Stroman, and all I've been hearing is like, I said earlier on the show that the Blue Jays, that they have a better shot at signing a zombie Babe Ruth than signing Marcus Stroman after the exit that he had with this team and the way things went down. And I listen, you just said he's on high on the priority order, or at least that was what I just interpreted. How have those two sides, like, so they have some kind of reconciliation here? The Blue Jays would no longer be worried about his fit in the clubhouse, his fit in terms of around the identity of the team? Because these are all sort of questions when the guy was dealt in the first place, John.
Right, and it's a very fair question. I suppose to take a step back, I was referring more to the industry and Stroman being a top five free agent starting pitcher for the industry, but I'll say a couple things here. Number one, while it wasn't that long ago that Marcus was a Blue Jay, the clubhouse has changed significantly since he left. New manager, of course, it's just a new time. So I would point out all those things about how it's a different time for the Blue Jays. And again, the clubhouse dynamics are somewhat different. The other part, and this is sort of the inside baseball part of free agency to point out, that the agent for Marcus Stroman is the same person who represents Kevin Gausman. So almost by definition, given everything we know about how much the Jays like Kevin Gausman, they are talking with Marcus Stroman's agent on a consistent basis. The question is just, how often does the name Stroman pop in to what I think we would all assume is a relatively Gausman-heavy dialogue? But from a standpoint of technicality, the Jays are in touch with Marcus Stroman's agent because Marcus Stroman's agent is Kevin Gausman's agent.
JD is losing his mind right now.
Yeah.
No, it's not about that, I don't think. I think he... Did he choke on coffee?
No, A-List.
You okay, JD? You all right?
Something happened. Let's
A-List
move on.
A-List is just doing her own thing. Honestly, it's not... It's a chain reaction, John. I'm sorry. I find it fascinating that they would even be talking to his agent. I guess it's a good thing because it shows a sign of maturity from all sides. Because here's... I never even wanted the Blue Jays to trade Marcus Stroman. I was very much in the camp of, hey, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And then the people who I'm not John Morosi by any stretch of the imagination, but my birdies, the people who were in the know that told me things went, hey, they want Stroman out of here badly. They do not want him around the young club. They do not want his personality around. They want them to be able to grow, flourish, become their own people, blah, 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 blah. And I would just say that, okay, sure, it's a different clubhouse. It's a different dynamic. There are more veterans. I just think it's a tough pivot point for me to get behind, or it's a tough idea for me to get behind the idea that, and this is no fault to Stroman's, like, Stroman is Stroman, but that's it. He's Stroman. And so if you're telling me that you're going to have him around other young guys like Pearson and around Manoa, and I don't know, it's not a tough sell for me because I like Stro. I'm saying it's a tough sell for me in terms of a belief that their opinions could change that drastically if that quote-unquote rumor mill that I had gotten wind of was true, was accurate.
Right. A couple of things. Number one, I do believe there are other teams out there that Stroman fits better than he fits Toronto right now. I think the Angels are one. The Mariners are another. Just to think two that are most outstanding to me right now. Both really in the market for starting pitchers, and I think both places that Marcus would potentially thrive more so maybe than Toronto. I also think that as we're working through these possibilities, if the Jays are not optimistic about their chances to get Gausman or Ray, I think the pivot point right now and the name that they're going to be talking about more is Gray more so than Stroman. I really believe that's where they would go next in terms of their priority. I believe that they made a good effort on Matz. I think that a three-year offer for Steven was fair in terms of term. Obviously it wasn't enough, but it was there was a good faith effort, and they gave it a pretty good shot. I think they have to realize, too, in general, just how competitive the free agent market has become for pitchers. I mean, that's a pretty healthy deal for Matz. 4 years for someone who has had a hard time staying healthy in the past. I realize he had a pretty good platform year, but in the past, he had some struggles staying healthy. That's a pretty good healthy contract here for him to get. And I think it really shows that in this next week before the CBA expiration, we're going to see some pretty significant dollars spent in the industry. I'm a little skeptical if we'll see some of the big shortstops signing, the likes of Correa and Seager. I think that's probably more likely next month or later, depending on how all this plays out from a standpoint of labor relations. But I think the starting pitching market is really moving, and we now have enough price points out there, whether it's an Eduardo Rodriguez, whether it's a Mats, Syndergaard, the Berríos extension. There are enough numbers that are there now that I think agents and teams have an idea of what value is, and it'll help them make some decisions going forward.
To stay on the labor relations front for a second, we found out yesterday that MLB and the Players Union have agreed to move the tender deadline from the 2nd of December to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November the 30th. That gives ARB eligible players who get non-tendered a little bit of a window to potentially sign before the labor stoppage. What's your read on that? And mostly in terms of, is that going to continue to speed up this market that's moved a little faster than maybe people expected? And are we headed for, you know, next Wednesday, we got to bring you on because there's just a flurry of guys signing before things lock down?
Yeah, it's going to be a week unlike any that we have experienced in a while in this industry, where we could see a lot of signings. I do think that tender deadline being moved up is I think a healthy thing for the industry to at least give those players a chance to sign before the night of December 1. We don't typically have as you would call it a free agency day like we see in the NHL or the NBA, but that day might feel like it a little bit, which will be unique. And then of course, let's all hope that there's a CBA at the end of the end of the rainbow. It's hard to really know where that exactly stands 1 week out. But I do think we're going to continue to see a flurry of activity, especially on pitching. And this gives those teams a chance to really huddle with their pro scouts, figure out who they want to target if they're non-tendered, and make some aggressive decisions. So I think that was the right call because, listen, there is a chance. How high of a chance, hard to say, but there is a chance that we're not going to have a deal by 11:59 p.m. on December 1. And so I think it at least gives those players an opportunity to find a new home in that 48-hour span. It's going to be a very, very busy stretch next week, and then we just have to wait and see what becomes on the other side of that. I think the issues, I'll say this, I'm encouraged that we have not heard a ton of leaks and criticism back and forth and sniping. It's really been I think from what I can tell outwardly, while maybe it's been a slow process, it has been a professional one. It has been I think a forthright one. The issues are known. They're there. The economic issues are real, but they're talking and they're not leaking a ton. And those things to me give me at least some reasons for optimism.
One of the elements that is surely going to be discussed is how ARB and pre-ARB players get handled.
Right.
We saw yesterday Wander Franco sign a 12-year extension that could reportedly go as high as $223 million. And when you look at Franco, he's 70 games into his major league career. Tatis got 14 years, $330 million, with just kind of a year and a half in the league. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays or you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s camp and you're about to head into your first ARB summer, how much are you kind of licking your chops on the Vlad side of this, seeing those deals for guys who, you know, are a little earlier on and a little less proven than Vlad is at this point?
Right. No, it's a great point. And the numbers to me, the comp is Tatis, mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways for Vlad. And those are just astronomical numbers. And that's why you look around and the Jays have some really important decisions to make about what their future payroll is going to be. You can't afford everybody. And I think with Vlad, it's hard for me to say how confident I am or not that they're going to get a deal done. But I do think the Tatis contract is the comp here. Franco's deal, he obviously is much less experienced than Vlad is. Tatis is much more similar in terms of his service time class. And obviously Vlad put up MVP numbers this year. He didn't win the award, but he put up MVP numbers. This is going to be, if he gets an extension, and an absolutely astronomical contract. And the Jays are going to have to make some decisions here about what they really want their club to look like 2-3 years down the line. And I'll make this point quickly. Remember back, like, after 2015, we were all talking about Josh Donaldson, who was the MVP, and we said, you got to extend him, or is there any case to trade him? In the end, they traded him too late and got too little for him. I'm not saying that they should trade Vlad or Bo now, because they shouldn't, but it does raise that thought of, at some point in time, you face that decision. Are you going to either extend him, trade him, or just let it play out? And letting it play out with Donaldson was probably not the optimal choice. We have to wait and see what the best choice ends up being for Vlad and Bo.
John Morosi, before we let you go here, just quickly, have you heard anything on the market developing for Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien specifically?
Semien, I think that's going to be I don't think anything is close on Marcus. I think that Ray is more likely to sign sooner. With Semien, he's part of this position player group that Scott Boras has, including Chris Bryant, including Corey Seager. Scott tends to want to wait and let the market play out more. So I think with Semien, it's his number probably ends up starting with a two. It's going to be, I think, north of $200 million, I would expect, that Semien gets. But I don't think it's close at all to that decision time. I do think Seattle's very involved. And with Ray, I think the Jays have a chance, but it's going to have to be, I would imagine, somewhere in a five-year deal at the minimum, and more likely in that six-year range, because you look at what Berrios got, it was basically six free agent years. I think for Ray, it's going to have to be every bit of that to get him signed.
John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, and enjoy the French version of the hockey sweater once we let you go here.
Bien sûr, bonne journée. Always a pleasure. Tout le plaisir pour moi. Always great talking to you guys.
Bonjour.
Au revoir.
I got nothing for you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, John. That Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
DonValleyNorthLexus.com?
Yeah, that's this French that you guys speak.
Et oui, oui.
6 years so, for Robbie Ray.
That's crazy.
Okay. So that was like, that was a weighty way to end that interview. So Marcus Semien, starting with a two. I thought he was going to say like $20 plus million a year. And I went, yeah.
No, you're off by a digit and how he was framing that.
For those of you keeping score at home, that's more money than George Springer got. And George Springer was, you know, ripping doubles off every single wall that they've ever constructed in the postseason with the Astros year over year over year. Was unanimously considered the best hitter on the market, and I think the best position player on the market a year ago. So to hear a number over two for Semien is, I'm sorry, but he's gone. That's done now. If that's the case, it's done. It's already done, and it's time to already just move on, because there's just no shot that the Blue Jays are going to give him that kind of money when we're talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s comp being Tatis, who already has that contract with a two.
With a three.
Sorry. I thought it was 280. Mm. Either way,
it could go as high as 330.
Okay,
when you factor in the escalators.
Either way, there's no salary cap, but there are budgets, and there is not a limitless, endless pool of cash as much as people want there to be. Damn. Get your bag, King. No, 6 years for Ray.
That's taking you to age 36. That's those when we talk about the Marco Estrada, hey, when did he fall off? Or hey, what are the years you're not as comfortable going into the back end at the same AAV for? It's kind of post 34.
I also think that this is just all speculation, right? Like, I don't know anything. You know, I pick between some stuff that some people have told me off air. Like, that's how I get stuff like the Stroman thing when he left. But it became pretty public knowledge. It's not like super insidery stuff. So this is not that. This isn't even like informed from somebody. But to me, it feels like if Ray is asking for 6 years, he's also a goner. That why maybe they're working so hard on a Mats and why they push so much like that, and why John is saying that. I don't know if he used the word failure, but disappointment, I think, maybe was the one. That it's because they know they're out on Ray.
And why every person we bring on is like, oh, yeah, the Jays would be open to trading for a pitching help, too.
Right. So that, to me now, if we're doing the recalibration of the Blue Jays offseason, or even we're jumping back up into that top block where we talked about fan anxiety of missing out, missing out, missing out. To me, I think that now your best outlook is some version of a John Gray type, if not John Gray, because Blake's done the sell job. And now, listen.
Now, if we don't get John Gray, I'll be so upset.
I mean,
upset.
He's not the only guy on the market, but Blake. He's the guy that feels most Blue Jays-y to me.
If we don't get him,
I just don't want to do the thing where, like, Raptors fans are so upset that they didn't get Rashawn Holmes because I was like, oh, Rashawn Holmes is the guy who fits best and fits the budget.
Sexy blogger pick, John Gray, is now my everything.
John Gray.
He's our John show's Gray. John Gray, you know. I love him.
He's the new Bing Bonga.
Yeah.
sure.
So get us John Gray or else we riot. But seriously, I think that you're looking at that and then the splashier acquisition is a trade and that it's feeling more and more like a trade is going to happen. The only issue that I've had with the trade, and it's something that we'll continue to discuss with insiders and amongst ourselves, is that I had always sort of believed that there was a path for the Blue Jays where they re-signed pitchers, especially bringing back Ray, in a reality where Ray was a somebody, that they could have found another Pete Walker-ish candidate, that they could have gotten a Gray and Ray scenario, and that you used your assets for trade to acquire insane hitting talent, that you went out and you got the... God, the deal that for some reason is quieted down a little bit. But that was it, that you were going and saying, we're getting elite level lefty sticks here. We're getting guys who have service time. We're getting things that are going to change the complexion of this lineup to replace Semien. Because losing Semien, I love this Blue Jays team, but you don't lose a top three MVP candidate and a Cy Young Award winner and feel good. You just don't. I'm sorry. You don't feel good. That's not good. I don't care how young Vlad is or how young Bo is or how great a breakout it was for blah, 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 blah.
I mean, you would be losing those guys from a team that also was good and a lot of fun, but missed the playoffs. Yeah. And you can't, like, yes, I think you can have some faith right now in the front office being able to identify potential fix or breakout candidates and find values. But I don't think, like, the Robbie Ray Marcus Semien dual outcome this year was the like 99.9th percentile outcome. Like you're not going to, even if you're very good at that, you're probably not going to repeat at Cy Young and number three in the MVP race on 1 year deals. It's just not how this works.
Mitch in Mississauga, text the text line.
Mitchy.
690 million dollars.
Listen, we know we tease you about your Rickyisms, but that's the one where we draw the line.
John Gray made me a lot of money last season, so let's do it. That's another one on the Gray bandwagon.
The Greyhound.
Oh, on the Greyhound.
That's pretty good.
Damn, yeah,
I got the four farming, which is better on text than
Blake has one sleep.
Yeah, the bunkmates for JD's fans.
He sleeps for more than 4 hours and he comes in with
get
Blake.
On the Greyhound. Keep those texts coming.
Always.
We'll take a look at some of them after the break. We'll talk a little Raptors as they get back in action tonight.
And now I want the Blue Jays, though, to have to limp into Marcus Stroman's camp and be like, it was our fault. We're sorry, Marcus.
Well, I know John said some potential landing spots for Stroman. Mm-hmm. St. Louis was my favorite for him. Mm. A ground ball pitcher in front of an elite defense in a pitcher-friendly division and ballpark. Stroman would have been awesome there. But instead, they got Steven Matz. Let us know how you feel. Keep the text coming, 590-590. We'll take your text and talk a little Raptors. After the break, it's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's the Fan Morning Show.
Good morning.
Sports at 590, The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar. He's J.D. Bunkus. I'm the only one without a toque.
You put one on, though, for a little while.
For like a second, and then I was like,
it was cold in here.
I felt left out.
I was just going to say, it really did seem, I was like, where did that come from? You just wanted to be a part of the crew?
Yeah, well, I did the Kendall Roy thing of I stood up on the table and started feeling the vents. I was like,
it's got to be 62 in here.
This isn't 68. This feels like 65 or 62.
I watched that episode last night, actually.
I think I knew that because you texted something in the group chat that gave away what episode you were on. Oh, yeah, the bad tweet. Yeah.
Hashtag Gray V Train just came in about being on the John Gray
bad
train.
Text. Bad
no, that's
text.
A great text.
It is a good one. I like Greyhound, though, especially
like
now that Greyhounds
train.
Are out of business.
Oh, so yeah, you're not giving away free sponsorship?
We can own it.
You and your
remember when that guy got his
head chopped
off on the Greyhound?
And then they started eating it.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, didn't he start? Wasn't he a cannibal? He was a cannibal.
He was?
Guys, he chopped the guy's head off on the Greyhound.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough.
And he started eating.
All right, text us the favorite murders you've witnessed.
I love how I'm like, Ailish, that's enough. And she's like, and then he got the spoon. okay. That's a tough one.
Another text. Ailish's For Farmy is great, but I propose For Farmers.
No. I propose and you don't
grow,
text us anymore.
We grow potatoes.
I was going to say, that sounds like you're a rural insurance company.
I would do that. And then we just grow potatoes.
You would be a rural insurance company? Do you even? Sometimes I feel like you don't know what you're responding to.
Yeah, well.
All right.
Welcome to the show.
I can't believe you just went over the cannibalism talk today. Yeah. Didn't think we were going to be there. Pretty sure we're in trouble for that.
Hey,
but
you're tired of hearing us talk about eating chips?
Yeah, listen.
How about eating?
Vic never does the stop doing this thing. He's the ultimate hype man who just supports everything we do. And even he, as Ailish was going to that, was doing the don't do it. Yeah. So that's cool. That's really cool.
Moving on.
It makes me think that Ailish is a person, like when you see a movie and it's like based on true events. Yeah. And it's like what that means is like one thing happened in this town one time and they're taking a ton of creative license. Ailish is like, oh, this is like borderline a true crime documentary.
I was telling you the real story about the Greyhound bus. Yeah. You just can't handle it.
I can't.
I'd like to actually bring up the betting lines for tonight here quickly. I
bet that you get annoyed at my takes.
No, I actually love your takes. Your takes are fire. So, Toronto Maple Leafs at LA Kings.
-155.
Yeah. I you know what I look at, though, is the most interesting betting trend here is that the under six is -147. That's heavy juice from -6.
We're looking at different places right now because I've got it at 5.5. It's crossed the threshold.
Yep. So that's it though. It's like, but what is 5.5 for you?
-105.
-105. Mm. Even still.
Yeah. So it's just crossed the threshold.
The Leafs are a team that have not been scoring. They're getting incredible goaltending. They're playing really great team defense. I think I mentioned this last show that the under has hit 6 of the last 7 games. And I love betting a streak like that. I always love betting a streak like that. But the last time I think that they went over, it was against the Kings.
Right.
I think that was the last time.
Because it was 5-1. Oh, Buffalo.
Right. Sorry, Buffalo. And then the time before that, though, was Kings.
Was the Kings, yeah.
I forgot about the Buffalo game. That's the asterisk game because it was the back-to-back and it was the debut of a rookie goaltender. I'm like,
who
actual
killed it.
And it's still your point. 6 of the last 7 have been unders.
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like you got to keep riding the streak, but I will admit that once you start to see the market really jump onto something like this, I get a little terrified.
So here's the thing, though. The Kings are just as under heavy as the Leafs. Those two teams combine 27 unders to 11 overs on the season.
Mm. And it's going to be a fun one.
The Kings are also on a streak of 5 of their last 6, the unders hit. So this is a team that's not scoring a lot and not allowing a lot of goals as well.
But also losing a lot, too.
So can I ask a follow question to the the under?
Is whatever you want.
Last time the Leafs played the Kings, Ailish made a good sales job for a Jack Campbell shutout.
And then I ruined everything.
Yeah. It's at plus 800 right now. Are you gonna chase it again, Ailish?
Well, last time I did that, he blew it. And then I commented on Trevor Moore, and Trevor Moore scored. Mm-hmm. So I think I should do the opposite if I want it to hit this time. Yeah. He's going to let in 12 goals.
12 goals.
And 12. Trevor Moore is not going to play well at all. That's the opposite of what I said last time, so we'll all see right. if it works.
So you're trying the double reverse jinx here.
Yes.
I never like betting the money line in hockey for favorites. I think that if you're going to bet favorites in hockey, you bet them in regulation. You try to take overtime out of it. I just think the value shifts too much. So Leafs minus 106 to win in regulation. I really don't mind that. The way the Leafs are playing right now, they've got some rest. It's the first game in this road trip. They already lost this team once. I actually think that there's some decent... there's never really good value on the Leafs, and I'm not saying that this is great. Usually when you're betting to win in regulation, you're getting plus money even on favorites playing halfway competent teams, but that's one that I kind of like. Now over the Raptors.
So the Raptors are +3.5 mm-hmm. at the Memphis Grizzlies. Money line's plus 145.
I kind of love the Raptors here.
So, oh, a little Homer's parlay tonight.
Yeah.
Could be a little Homer's parlay tonight.
I love that.
Before we get into the specifics of the Raptors line, mm-hmm. OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, Yuta Watanabe, all still questionable.
Yeah.
On the Grizzlies side...
I thought Yuta was definitely going to play.
No. He's still listed as questionable officially. Mm. He's been posting as if he's going to play. Mm-hmm. He did a full run through of practice, but you never know until the final designation. On the Grizzlies side, D'Anthony Melton is out, which is a big deal because he's been a pretty big piece for them, and Dylan Brooks is questionable.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of uncertainty in this one. This might be one you wait a little bit to get the shoot-around updates on. But you like Raptors plus 3.5.
I just look at this one, this just strictly narrative standpoint, and having also seen both of these teams actually a decent chunk. I've weirdly watched a lot of Grizzlies this year because I ended up at one of their games live. And also,
I heard this story about 12 or 13 times.
Okay. So never mind then.
Yes, and then John Moran.
I like sometimes when your little Nicky laugh comes out.
Who's that?
That's little Nicky.
Yeah, it's an old Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I forget that you little baby. Are a lot younger than us. So
anyway.
I just don't think the Grizzlies are very good. I think that they're very okay. And if you're the Raptors, you need this one. And if you're the Grizzlies, you just came off of a big win against Utah where you had a buzzer beater three, essentially, to beat them on the road. Now you're coming back home. This is a Raptors team that's been sort of clowned on a bit recently. But I just kind of view the Grizzlies as more, they're not the Sacramento Kings because the Kings have been putrid. So I don't like to say it, but they're closer to that tier. And I just think that teams like the Grizzlies, younger teams that are still formulating an identity that have really only one guy that can create, like Jaren Jackson, I'm not a big, huge fan of. He loves to shoot. It's okay. But I think that he's actually just kind of a version of Bargnani. He's like cooler Bargnani. People actually like him. I just don't think that they have a lot of what hurts the Raptors. They've got Steven Adams, but it's not the same Steven Adams. I like the different pieces that the Raptors have to throw at John Morant. I don't know.
They're going to get the ball out of his hands. We've seen the method for it. They didn't do a very good job of it against Portland.
And with Steph.
And they overdid it against Utah with Mike Conley, where it's like, you don't need to do that with Mike Conley.
But Portland has multiple guys.
Right. And that's what's tough. Dame gets off the ball, it's the CJ. If CJ gets off the ball, it's the Dame. And especially without D'Anthony Melton, who is generally their secondary ball handler. You know, Desmond Bane's a really nice piece, but he's mostly a tertiary guy at this point. Like Melton is averaging 10 points for them and handles the ball a fair amount. And if they don't have Brooks too, Brooks is another guy that they trust with secondary playmaking. So, you know, Kyle Anderson's a nice playmaker, but you're not really worried about Kyle Anderson operating in 4-on-3 the same way you are with a Draymond. And they just don't have quite the shooters if Dylan Brooks is out to punish you like Golden State did.
So, I just bet the Raptors plus 140.
There you
on
go.
The money line, I just placed a wager on them. I like the Raps tonight.
I did that.
Yeah.
With Leafs money line and Oilers money line, and it's +439. Mm. Oilers are playing the Coyotes, who are a dumpster fire, and that'll keep me.
And they got shut out.
And they,
Old McDavid. Didn't get his point.
I think he comes back with a vengeance tonight. Plus 439 on that. I feel good about it.
So I haven't bet Coyotes games or against them this season because they're the ultimate. It's so hard to find value in placing a bet against them. And
it's
my
like
brain,
the Rocket playing the Rockets in the spread. It's like every game it's double digits. Yeah.
Although I am playing the Rockets.
But you're doing that as the cheapy add to the parlay money line, right? Yeah. Not the spread.
The other bet that I have tonight, if anybody wants to know, maybe I'll tweet these later. I have.
See if you can get that stuff boosted.
I should have done that before, but now it's a little late because I already placed the bet. Now I don't like I don't like other people having what I have, you know, like better things. That's what happened. I won Coward's Parlay last week. Do you know what happened with that?
You forgot to post it and then
no,
that's what you won.
I put in the Coward's Parlay, which was Ravens money line, Bucks money line, and Browns money line. Browns, thanks a lot, by the way, for making me sweat that out. Like you losers. Then last minute, the Ravens announced that it's Huntley in for Jackson. And so Coolbet boosts it to plus 300. I had already bet it at plus 150. I don't get the extra boost once I've already put in the bet. Everybody celebrates a big Coward's Parlay win, plus 300. And I'm sitting there like not even happy about my Coward's Parlay streak break.
Hey, but no, you needed that. You needed
that streak break.
Unfortunate timing, but you know what?
I've been hot with NBA parlays, though. I've been texting them to Blake a lot.
Because you've been texting them to Blake.
No.
Put them in our group chat so I can cash in on some stuff, guys.
I had mine busted last night.
But have I not been hot? Have I not been sending you winners, winners, winners? Yeah. This is what I like tonight. Lakers on the road against the Pacers. Pacers stink. Lakers are playing in a back-to-back, but LeBron comes back. He's going to be pissed off. I just think that LeBron kicks everybody's ass tonight. And if you're getting a plus number, I think the Lakers suck, but this is one where I'm going pissed off, angry, rested LeBron. Give me that at plus 106. Chicago Bulls at Houston Rockets. Bulls are great. Rockets suck. Minus 417 is a parlay piece. I'm throwing it in. And then my Wizards playing the Pelicans. The Pelicans are this weird team where, for whatever reason, I don't know why they get respected the way that they do. They suck. They have
They
have 3 wins, and yet it's minus 164 for a Wizards team that has been at the top of the Eastern Conference this year that already beat them without Bradley Beal. So that's the parlay. That's plus 311.
If you're looking at the Homer's parlay, by the way, brought it up. Raptors money line at plus 145. Leafs in regulation at plus 100. I'm seeing it right now. That little Homer's parlay gets you plus 390.
Why didn't I do that?
Raptors outright. Leafs in regulation, plus 390.
That's Are you on the site that is the green site?
Ailish.
Well, I don't want to give the names out.
Anyway.
Yes?
Yes. Okay. That's where I'm looking right
no
now.
No free marketing on Blake's.
No, absolutely court. Not. Right. Anyway, so that's the Homer's parlay there if you're feeling it.
I just parlayed the ones that you said, JD. Placed it, so.
So you're just riding with me today.
Yeah, that's
I will
it.
Say you've mushed, you've been, you like, you when you tail, has it's not been very successful.
That's, you don't even know. That's so inaccurate.
No, but I think that it's kind of, it's like a karma thing where you tail and then you're kind of sitting at the back of the bus going, hey, I could drive this bus better. Hey, this sucks on this bus. And then the driver's all angry at the front. It's Chris Farley and Billy Madison like, I swear to God, I'll drive this mother up. You know, it's like that's
who
the dynamic.
30
we have.
Bagged lunches.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I thought you were saying bags of chips. I was excited.
No, you.
So you guys are in on the Raptors tonight at Memphis.
Yeah,
that one's at 8 o'clock tonight. By the way, with some of the injury caveats aside, that we don't know if a couple guys will be back. That suggests to me that despite the Raptors being 8-10, you guys feel a little better about things after the concern index yesterday. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, Blake. You know, I think it's easy to get carried away.
Ayla's still placing her bets as she's talking.
No, it's easy to get carried away in the negatives when you are a fan and you're in the Twitter sphere and Raptors Twitter likes to highlight negative things instead of positive things. But I think yesterday you kind of talked me down a bit and I feel more confident with the Raptors big picture. I feel great about the Leafs. We've always felt great about the Leafs. But right now, I think you did a great job at actually at minimizing my fears with your concern index. Nothing I don't think was higher than a 4. And most things that I thought were a bit spicier, you knocked down to like a 2, a 2.5. And you are the expert. So if you say that I shouldn't be concerned, then I feel better.
I mean, I don't think you should be concerned in terms of like, oh, they're going to be the 30th ranked defense and they're going to have another 2-7 stretch ahead.
Yes.
But I still feel mostly how I felt coming into the season, which is this is roughly a 500 team. And if they underperform that a bit, they'll probably lean into being worse. And this is why the 36.5 over under before the season was so tough, is that seeing them win 37 games is, that's really hard to see. If they're tracking toward 36, 37, they probably lean into a low 30s number. But I think they're roughly a 500 team. I think they're a pretty average team overall. The defense has got to get better, though. One way the defense could get better is the return of OG Anunoby.
Woo.
He hasn't defended completely up to his standards so far this year, but he is, on most nights, their best individual defender.
Mm-hmm.
The other element here is, and we've talked about this when Siakam was coming back, and then we talked about it when Birch was coming back, and I'm sure OG will come back, and then Gary Trent's going to be out or something, but the Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Kem Birch foursome, which I think we're leaning toward those four guys are probably going to start, and it might be Barnes or Trent that heads to the bench. We have only seen 6 minutes of that foursome together with one of Trent or Barnes.
Wow.
So we have almost no sample on, hey, if Birch is sticking in the starting lineup, what do either of these groups look like? JD, do you have, I know Gary Trent's been someone you're kind of tracking and you've been hot and cold on at times. Is he the guy you want to see go to the bench? Is it Kem Birch going back to the bench? What are you hoping to see there?
I'd actually like to leave Trent in the starting lineup. There's almost a little bit of, hey, he doesn't really have a conscience and he has to have one a little bit when he's on the floor with the best players. Also, it leaves him more in spots that I like him, which is open for wide open shots. Mm-hmm. I am more cold on Trent when he tries to create for himself. And granted, he's been better at that this season. I really am impressed by his improvement in the mid-range game. And there, Bill Simmons used to do this, I think. It was like the no-no yes player.
Trick or treat.
Yeah, he's the no-no yes player on this Raptors team where he does things like, I referenced one from the other day where there's a transition opportunity he has. It's a one-on-three. And Gary Trent goes and he scored. He scored at the rim. He kind of bounced off somebody.
Oh, was that the one where he went to the free throw line?
No. Okay. He didn't go to the free throw line on this. I text you every time he goes to the free throw line because he never does that.
Yeah, our once every two games text.
Right, exactly. Gary Trent going to the free throw line. Things are chasing. It reminds me of a hitter that doesn't walk. And you go, well, if he could just walk more, and it's when someone doesn't go to the free throw line, you go, if they could just go to the free throw line more, it's like, eh, but they don't usually do that.
Or it was like when you, if you walked Kevin Pillar, it was like an indictment of you as a pitcher. It's like, get the hook. If you send Gary Trent to the free throw line, it's like, hey, come on, defend a little better, guys.
So this Raptors team isn't really deep enough for me to be overly pissed off about any scenario here. Mm-hmm. So this is really not a hard line take. I'm just saying, if you ask me what I think the best situation is for Gary Trent, I think it's being around really good players where you're not asking him to be your 1A scorer. And the difficulty I have with this is that, and I think you've referenced this already on the show, but it doesn't seem as though on a night in, night out basis, Barnes is ready to run second units. The question
is, the playmaking has trended in the right direction. Yeah. Like even during this stretch where he's looked a little fatigued and stuff, the passing's getting there.
Yeah, I told you, I believe the passing is innate with him.
Yeah, it's gonna be there.
So I'm really not worried about it. It's kind of like the Austin Matthews doesn't have a lot of even strength goals things, where I'm going, if this is the concern, then we're in the best area that we could possibly be in. I'm more concerned if Austin Matthews' wrist hurts or his shoulder hurts than I am with him having a low shooting percentage. So I don't think that there's a very good solution is I guess the way that I'm kind of coming around on this, is that there's really no perfect thing because we've already seen the Raptors when they're sacrificing size, how much it damages them. I would say that tonight, because it's Steven Adams and he's going to start, I would start Kem Birch. And I would view this more as an evolving starting lineup thing where it depends on who you're playing. Again, though, this is why I like the Raptors tonight, is because I think that Steven Adams is someone who can be defended by the centers that the Raptors have, that he's not overly dangerous where he's going to kill you inside.
He's going to get a lot of offensive rebounds, but those are ones he's going to tip out. And
exactly.
He's not looking to get a ton of second chance.
But with no Melton and with
potentially no Brooks,
I just don't see a lot of guys who can create. It's Desmond Bane, it's John Morant, and then maybe a little bit of Jaren Jackson. But Jaren Jackson is the kind of guy the Raptors are going to be able to defend very, yes. very well. And so I just don't think that the Grizzlies are going to be able to run up the score here, which has been the formula for beating the Raptors. This is going to be one where maybe we come in here tomorrow, I hope anyways, and say the Raptors defense is back, but really it might be a bit of smoke and mirrors because they're good at shutting down Ja, they're good at shutting down Jaren Jackson, and then they play three more games and we go, oh, maybe it wasn't fixed. That's kind of how I feel about tonight.
So Raptors at Memphis Grizzlies at 8 o'clock. It's a little chance for them to salvage this road trip that they're 1-3 on, maybe even end 3-3 before they return home for 10 of 11. The Leafs don't return home until December 1st, but when they do,
starting tomorrow, we'll begin giving away Leafs home game tickets for
the
season.
Be weird if it was road games.
Well, you know, we got listeners from all over.
You can go to San Jose
wow.
on your own dime, but we'll give you the tickets.
And they are like $49 there. Yeah. Be sure to tune into the Fan Morning Show daily for instructions. So this starts tomorrow. You'll have to listen to us, and then you'll have to do something else. Don't worry about it. We'll tell you all about it tomorrow, but don't turn that dial, because if you want to win Leafs tickets, you got to keep listening to us.
Yeah, okay. Don't turn that dial for the next 24 hours.
You never know when it might pop up.